This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire's new transportation commissioner is calling upon the state to take ownership of its transportation system. Christopher Clements says the investments that nations like China and India are making in their highways, bridges, and rail are driving their economic booms and should serve as an overdue wake-up call to New Hampshire, where Clements says transportation has for too long taken a back seat. Still, it is hard to ignore the costs of building and maintaining infrastructure. And at Clements' department, money's been in short supply lately. In the budget passed last year, transportation took a big financial hit. Also, federal funds haven't come through as strongly as hoped. And many in the legislature oppose new revenue sources like a hike in the gas tax or expanded tolls. Clements says he is optimistic, however, that recently more Granite Staters are starting to make that link between public infrastructure funding and overall prosperity. Today in The Exchange, our first sit-down with New Hampshire's new Transportation Commissioner, Christopher Clement, and let's hear from you, too. In an era of limited funds, what priorities should the Transportation Department put on the top of its list, and what can wait? Do you agree with the Commissioner that better transit systems mean more prosperity? If so, where does the money come from to achieve that? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Clement, welcome. Nice to meet you.
Good morning. Thank you, Laura.
Well, just this month, you wrote that India and China's infrastructure spending should be what you called an overdue wake-up call to both our country and our state. What are you trying to say there?
Well, what I'm saying is prior to me coming to state government, I spent 20 years working in a manufacturing company here in New Hampshire, and we had a global presence. And over the 20 years, I spent a lot of time traveling around the world and not really necessarily paying too much attention to transportation until I came to state government, thinking back during my travels. And I think during my first trip to China as a 20-something-year-old engineer, and looking at that country at that time, Shanghai was just more or less starting to get going, not really built up, still a third-world country, as you'd say. And the last trip that I made, you know, at 40 years old, if you will, 20 years later, was a much different China, much different Shanghai with roads just leading to nowhere, more or less in these big developments being built with no people in them yet. They were just building these structures and building these bridges and superhighways and passenger rail, for example, and just building for the future.
That was at Goss International, right?
That's correct. I worked at Goss International for about 19 years, so yes.
So what's the takeaway for New Hampshire from that? That, you know, if you don't invest in your transit structure, you're doomed?
Well, I think it's that way for the country. You know, as I would travel to these countries and come back, I would just, you know, compare and contrast as I land back down in the U.S. and I'd be traveling back to New Hampshire. I'd be looking at the different airports and the different modes of transportation in California and Texas, and certainly coming back out here east, we're a little bit different here in New Hampshire than certain parts of the country like California. But I always compare and contrast, saying, gosh, you know, the Chinese are really, really moving quickly. And you know, as a nation, I worried because I thought that we weren't doing enough in investment and certainly in transportation. And certainly being in this job today and being in the department for the last 3 or 4 years, that's absolutely the case.
Well, you said in that note as well that investing in transportation has taken a backseat and stagnated for many years. I'm quoting you here, resulting in an aging and overburdened highway system that continues to show troubling signs of slippage. Some pretty strong language there, Commissioner. Stagnated, pretty strong word. I mean, there are projects out there. Things are getting repaved. 101 looks pretty nice. 93 is getting expanded. So stagnated.
Well, it is. I think in some areas it is stagnated. I think that when we look at our nearly, 2,200 bridges in the state, we have 148 of those bridges, what we call red listed, which means they're structurally deficient and functionally obsolete. And that number is growing by 15 to 20 per year. At this time, based on current funding levels, we're only able to get off maybe 10 to 15 of those bridges off the red list per year. And then just as fast as we get those, you know, 10 to 15 off, there's 15 or 20 coming back on. So we're just keeping even with our red list.
So you're always scrambling to keep up with
that. We're always scrambling to keep even. You know, with the 10-year plan that we have in process today, we're putting between, you know, $20, $25 million per year in red list bridges, and we should be doing, you know, $35 to $40 million a year to really get ahead of the curve.
What else is stagnating besides the bridges, in your opinion?
Well, I think if you look at the secondary roads, of course, those are deteriorating very quickly, and the limited funds that we have now, certainly, again, you'll hear me mention the 10-year plan, we're putting a lot of focus on keeping the good roads good, because when the bad roads that are already in disrepair, it's a factor of 10 to bring those back up to, you know, a place that we need them in order to repair them or rebuild them, in some cases, major reconstruction. So we're trying to keep the major roads in good repair. There's an emphasis on getting Interstate I-93 finished, and we'll talk about more of that in the program, but yes.
So when you say secondary roads, give us a couple examples, just to be clear. So the big ones are, you know, 93, 95, 101. What are some of the secondary roads that the department has oversight of that you say are not in good shape?
Right. I think if you look at Route 112, that was one area that we got a lot of questions on during the GASSET process. That road has been problematic in the past. It's very bumpy. We hear that in the spring when the snow melts and the frost heaves come up, that that the road, you know, the kids on the school bus talk about that road as being the roller coaster ride when they're on that. Walpole Charleston, which is Route 12, that was in the deferred list. We're working on getting that back. That's actually back in the 10-year plan. That's been a road that's been a problem for a while. Also in the 10-year plan, we're bringing Route 125, which is a major area. It's not a secondary road, as you said. Bringing that up, move that from 2018 in the 10-year plan to 2014. So we're looking at not necessarily the I-95s or the big turnpike roads, if you will, but bringing some of those secondary roads in as well.
So, Commissioner Clement, as we look at this, what you call lack of infrastructure investment, what's behind that? Why aren't we heeding this overdue wake-up call?
Well, I think it's not necessarily just New Hampshire. I think it's the country as a whole. I mean, we really did the big build-out 50, 60 years ago, and for the most part, I mean, we've all maintained our roads and bridges, all of our states, to some certain extent based on the federal funds that we're getting, but I don't think we haven't done enough. And certainly, as you look at what we're hearing now from the federal USDOT and Federal Highway Administration, that all states should plan, you know, they should look at perhaps getting a 30 to 35% cut in federal funding. And if that happens, that's going to, you know, that would affect us in a profound way as well, because it just means we're going to do even less and less and less. I mean, as you drive around the state, you can see the roads and the bridges, the netting that we have under the bridges, keeping the mortar from falling down on the roads. Not in all cases. I don't want to make it sound like it's, you know, it's mission critical, but those types of areas are the areas that we need to address.
So lack of money is causing this lack of infrastructure investment that you say is so critical. Lack mm-hmm. of money at the federal level, lack of money at the state level?
I think certainly lack of money at the federal level, and it's been going down for some years. And again, another 10-year plan point. When we built out our 10-year plan last fall, we had a decision. We could either go forward based on level funding at $140 million per year, or we could go forward with a fiscally constrained conservative program based on what we were hearing from Federal Highways, that we should, all states should plan on doing on the 30% cut. So we decided at that time, New Hampshire DOT, it would be better if we had a fiscally constrained program, be conservative, because it's easier to go through these 27 hearings with the cities and towns saying we want to go forward with $100 million a year plan versus $140 million plan in the event that what the feds are telling us comes to fruition. And we did that. And I must say that before our first meeting in July, we at DOT were somewhat concerned as we went to these hearings, thinking that most of the communities are going to be very upset. And, you know, why did you make that decision? Why didn't you just go forward with the level funding, i.e. being at 140 versus 100 million a year? And Laura, for the most part, you know, the 27 hearings that we had, the cities and towns and the communities and the MPOs were really, really great. They understood. They understand why we did what we did, and that it's a lot easier for us to come back, you know, in March, once we find out hopefully what's going on, to say we have additional funding versus the other coming forward say, you know what, You can't have that road. You can't have that bridge. You can't have those potholes fixed, whatever it is. That's very difficult to do. So
MPO is Municipal Planning Organization, right?
Correct.
So, okay, money at the federal level, big cut. You'd hope to get 140. Now you're only going to get 100. What about revenue raising here at the state level, though, Commissioner? For example, the gas tax hasn't been raised in 20 years here in New Hampshire.
Yes, since 1991. That's right. I mean, that's... That's one of those discussions that's always very, very tough. And, you know, being a New Hampshire resident, born and raised and educated and working here in business for 20 years, it's why I love our state so much, because we are fiscally conservative. We really take these types of fee increases or tax increases very seriously, which I love. And that's why our state, I would say, is in better condition than most. So when you're having these discussions regarding gas tax or tolling or whatever, they're very contentious. But I think that as we look at some of these projects like Interstate 93, I've spoke a lot about Interstate 93, that I think that based on the time that we're in now, you know, we as a state, regardless of what the federal funds are, we can, as a state, can make the decision to go forward with I-93 or not. We can make the decision to fund it on our own. And I think that, you know, in life, timing is everything. And I think from a business perspective, we always, at Goss International, always invested in research and development during downtimes like these. So when the market turned around, we were poised and ready with new products. And I feel it's the same way here in transportation. While the market is down, i.e. while borrowing cost of capital right now is at historic lows, you and I and everyone on the phone will never see bonding rates as they are today. They're like 2.4%. So we could go out for I-93, for example. We have $365 million left to finish I-93. We could go out potentially, get a $365 million bond and bond I-93 and get it done. So
bonding, it's a cheap time to invest in this.
It's a cheap time to borrow money, number one. Number two, the bid prices that we're getting from our contractors are at historic lows. In some cases, they're 20% below our DOT's engineer's estimate, which has never happened before. So contractors need their work. They're hurting. We certainly don't want to exploit that. But if you look at that from a timing perspective, that's great. And the third one is when we talk about China and India and the other third world countries coming online, you know, petroleum prices have stabilized. We've seen them go up in the last week or so, and steel prices have stabilized. So if you look at cost of borrowing money, if you look at, you know, the bid prices from the contracted community, and if you look at...
The timing's right.
The timing
you're
is right.
Saying. I've got one more question for you on that, Commissioner Clement, but we have to take a break. And when we come back, you'll take your calls, too. So stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEAF Network Organizations, the statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And the Brattleboro Retreat, providing treatment programs for young people ages 6 to 12 in their fully renovated Children's Inpatient Psychiatric Center. Information at brattlebororetreat.org. More with New Hampshire's new Transportation Commissioner Christopher Clement on The Exchange on NHPR, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, how adoptees are using DNA to find family. New Hampshire weather today, clouding up, highs around 30 in the North Country, 35 to 40 in the rest of the state. Winter weather advisory in effect for tonight, snow developing with a changeover to ice and rain overnight in southern and central areas of the state. Temperatures will be rising. Tomorrow, snow changing to ice before ending during the day in the North Country. Any ice will change to rain in central and southern New Hampshire before ending. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a discussion with Christopher Clement, the Department of Transportation's new commissioner here in New Hampshire. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook. We hope you'll go to our page, join the conversation there. In an era of limited funds, what priorities do you think the Transportation Department should put on the top of its list? What do you think can wait? Do you agree with Commissioner Clement that better roads and bridges mean more prosperity? And if so, where should the money come from to build those investments? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. 1-800-892-NHPR. Again, email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Clement, before we go to our listeners, I did want to just follow up on that argument you were making before the break about I-93. Strike while the iron is hot, so to speak. You know, costs are way lower than they've been, sometimes 20% lower than they've been in many years. But the gas tax here in New Hampshire has not been raised in 20 years, as we've said. So let's just throw out a number. How about a 5-cent gas tax? What does that do for I-93?
Wow. I've been asked that question a lot the last weeks. A 5-cent gas tax would bring in right now about $36 million a year. So 1 penny of gas tax equates to $8.3 million in revenue. So if we went out right now based on the current bond rates and got a $365 million bond or a loan, if you will, that's about $33 million a year. And a 5-cent gas tax would bring in about $36 million a year. So you imagine if we were able to do that, have dedicated restricted funds directly to the I-93 project, it would completely pay for the program. Then, Laura, all those funds that we're putting towards I-93 today would be freed up and we could put towards the rest of the system.
So should we do it?
I think we absolutely should do it. From an investment point of view, if you look back again, as I was talking in my private sector days, I mean, we were always nervous even in the private sector to make the investment because you never know what tomorrow is going to be. But in the 20 years I was there, when we made the investment in these downtimes, it always paid off. And I absolutely believe that if we made that investment today, it would pay off. It would affect the state in such a profound way from every in an economic way all throughout the state, on the southern tier, on the northern tier, if I-93 was finished, because it's the backbone of our state. It feeds our entire state north to south.
You know, there's been some discussion, Commissioner, I'm sure you've heard it, about how more fuel-efficient vehicles, especially hybrid vehicles, have helped bring those gas tax revenues down,
right,
in addition to the fact,
right,
that it hasn't been raised in 20 years, because they consume less gas. And some people around the country are actually looking at taxing these hybrid cars differently. How would that work, and is that fair?
Well, it's not determined how it's going to work yet. I mean, there's been studies done in Oregon, in other parts of the country. I can tell you that the USDOT does not have a path forward on that. We actually have some legislation in New Hampshire to study that, and I'm going to be on that panel. But you're right. With the cars being more fuel efficient, they're paying less. They're less paying less gas tax. And the cars, if you think about it from an operational point of view, the cars that are paying the least amount of gas tax are the ones that we have to do the most maintenance for in terms of plowing and sanding and salting because they're very light and so on and so forth. But nationally, we have to figure that out because very soon, you know, the gas tax revenue is going to continue to decline to a point where we're not going to be able to harvest any revenue from it at all. So that debate is ongoing and it's going to be ongoing for some time. But you had another part of your question.
No,
I think
go
it's
ahead.
Fair.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Is it fair?
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Let's say I have a hybrid, which I don't, but right. Let's say I have one. I put a lot of money into that hybrid because they're expensive. And I'm helping the environment because I'm consuming less gas. I'm helping the U.S. trade deficit because I'm importing less oil from Saudi Arabia or whatever. So is it really fair to tax these people for doing the right thing for clean air and all that?
Well, I think it is, actually. I think that if I drive a big truck. So if I'm driving a truck and you're driving a hybrid car, if we're driving on the road the same amount of miles on that road, I think that it should be equitable. I don't think that, you know, one vehicle versus another should pay more or less. I think that if we don't come up with a system, whether it's we're calling a VMT tax, vehicle miles traveled, and that's what's being looked at, by the way, for these hybrid cars and electric cars, that there will be some type of tax going forward, whether you have a conventional vehicle like a truck like I have or if you have a hybrid car, that you'd be paying an equitable amount for the road. Again, my point that we have to maintain the roads to a certain level and those small cars, and we have to go out and sand and salt more to keep the road safe because they're lighter and they don't necessarily have four-wheel drive or whatever.
Okay, controversial, vehicle miles traveled, because a lot of people in New Hampshire have to travel 40, 50 miles for work. So
right.
If you're taxed on vehicle miles traveled, some people are going to be upset about that.
Well, I think that when the vehicle miles traveled comes into play, it's going to be when the gas tax is no longer there. So I don't think it's going to be additive. I don't think that you're going to be paying the gas tax that you have today plus another layer of VMT. I mean, like I said, there's going to be lots and lots and lots of discussion and debate on it.
Well, so, lots for us to talk about.
The jury's still out.
And let's let our listeners join us. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the Exchange, it's New Hampshire's new transportation commissioner, Christopher Clement. We're covering everything from roads and bridges to rail and federal funding. We'll talk about buses in a little bit, too. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And first up is Perry in Hudson. Hey, Perry, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have a question related to working. So I actually have lived in the state for almost 20 years, and I have recently graduated college and looking for jobs in the Boston area. And would love to stay up here, except for the commute can be a little bit of a hassle. And I can remember, you know, for years, everybody talking about having rail stations in New Hampshire that link into the MBTA commuter rail system. And I was wondering, are they still talking about that? Are we ever going to have commuter rail in New Hampshire that links into the Boston system? And where does that fall on the priority list? I understand, you know, maybe now is not the best time, but, you know, have they been working on, you know, talking to the MBTA people and
LinkedIn? That's a great question, Perry. Yeah, and just to let you know, Perry, I've been doing this show for 16 years, and we've been talking about it for at least 16 years, probably a lot longer. Go ahead. It's a great question. Thanks, Perry.
It is a great question, and it comes up a lot. What I could tell you, Perry, is that there is lots of discussion on it. That's a topic of very high emotion. There's certainly different sides of the equation in terms of whether we think we need it or not. I could tell you that our Department of Transportation, your Department of Transportation, I should say, we received a grant from the Federal Railroad Administration, the FRA. It's a $2.4 million grant to do a study on the corridor from Boston all the way up to Concord. We are working to package that up now. We want to bring that forward to the governor and council probably in March, where that would get voted on. That process would take about 12 to 18 months, and then the information that we would get back from that study, the data, if you will allow us to have those discussions on whether it's equitable or not. One part of that study is also going to look at, you know, it's going to look at bus, it's going to look at rail, what it's called alternatives analysis, whether you're a commuter, whether you're passenger rail, or whether you're taking bus, and how all of those can either coexist together, or if you should have just bus, or you should have rail in order to get from different parts of the state, from Concord all the way down in Boston. Other than that, there isn't a lot of movement right now. I think that if we look at, again, and I'm sorry to say, if you look at the finances, if you look at what's going on economically in the country and the state, we as a state don't have the funds right now to put towards that. We're trying to keep our bridges. We're trying to maintain the system with our bridges and our highway system, but we are looking at passenger rail, and I think the first step really is to get the information to understand what it would take to have passenger rail, how much it would cost the state, how much fare box of revenue we receive from riders that would take it every day, and then what the difference would be, and then where would those funds come from. It would be the similar discussion like we had on Interstate 93. If we wanted to do that project, it's going to cost money, and we have to decide where the funds are going to come from. And
although, boy, this thing has been studied to death, right? I mean, I can't even count how many shows I've done on. There's a new study suggesting passenger rail linking to Boston. I mean, I'm just wondering what's left to be studied.
Right. I know there's been studies done in the past. I wasn't here at the time, so I don't really have all the background on all the studies. But, Laura, what I can tell you is that this FRA analysis, which is going to study the corridor, and then this Federal Transit Authority, the FTA piece of this analysis, is going to look at all modes of transportation, how they're linked together. Again, from Boston all the way to Concord, you know, with stops at the Manchester Airport.
Here's an email from Dean. And Perry, thanks a lot for that call. Dean says, okay, beyond getting a link from Boston to Concord, he says, the key to everything else New Hampshire might do with rail. He says, give us some idea of how rail should fit in to New Hampshire in the long term, to Montreal, connecting the isolated North Country, a winter ski train, a summer lake train. This is how we used to do it in the old days. Right. There'd be the trains from New York and Boston. Up to the White Mountains. So he's saying, not just commuters, let's look at the whole big picture. Thanks for the email, Dean.
Right. I guess I'll go back that with rail, we've got to walk before we run. And I think that we need to get this study done. We need to get the information so we can have these discussions without emotion, but with data and analysis that we can make so that future commissioners and future legislatures can make intelligent decisions based on that information and how we're going to invest the money. I think that once we get to a point where we do have passenger rail, we come into the state, we're going to have to see how it goes. And if the ridership is there, if the fare box is paying for the operational cost, then those discussions are going to be much different.
You know, it's interesting, and there's always this question of, if you build it, will they come? And the skeptics have said, no, they won't. Everybody says, oh, I'd love to ride the train. But then when it's actually there, they say, gosh, I have to be at that meeting at 9:30, and the train's not going to make it. You know, we're so used to leaving when we want, doing what we want, jumping into our individual cars. It's very convenient. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if people in New Hampshire would have that more New York, New Jersey sensibility where, okay, I'm going to take train X. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, for instance, last weekend I took my sons down, my father-in-law and my sons, we went down to the Celtics game. We rode Amtrak down. It was very nice.
You live on the Seacoast.
Yeah, we took it from Durham. We rode it right in, you know, right into the TD Garden. It was great. But if you look at Amtrak and how they're running up the corridor from Massachusetts all the way up into Maine, Maine today is still giving $10 million of operating funds, their congestion mitigation air quality funds. It's called CMAQ. So Maine is pledging 100% of those CMAQ funds to the Downeaster every year to help with the operational costs. So it's not, and then the Downeaster is one of the most successful routes with Amtrak. So if you look at that, and you look at that the state of Maine is still contributing 100% of their CMAQ funds to help the operational costs for Amtrak, there's still those discussions of whether it would stand by itself or not. I mean, it really comes down to funding, and it comes down to taxing. And if we want to have these different modes of transportation, it all comes down to cost. I think that we would all love to have trains, and we'd love to expand our bus program. But again, it comes down to dollars and cents.
I want to ask you about buses in a minute, Commissioner Clement. But okay, Let's take another call, and let's see. This is Ada in Marlboro. Hi, Ada. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Hi, Laura.
Go ahead, Ada.
I live on Troy Road in Marlboro, which is state maintained, but only at the bare minimum level. And it's led me to think about frost heaves. It's my understanding that if you pave with more asphalt, like maybe twice as much thickness, then the frost heaves are really reduced in severity and the road will go a lot longer before you have to repave. And I was wondering if a cheap, I'm on the radio. I was wondering if that would be a good thing to use some of those cheap bonds for, would be to really make some roads more frost heat resistant so that they could coast for longer before they have to be repaved.
Okay, Ada, thanks for the call.
Ada, that's a great question. We currently have $22.5 million a year in what we call our state's betterment program. And we use the betterment program for projects just like that, certainly where you are on Marlboro, for shimmying, if you will, and filling in potholes in order to get us by until those roads can be either, you know, having a 2-inch overlay, which is what you were talking, having, you know, new pavement put down or reclaimed is when you grind up the pavement and put it down again. But I think it comes back. I don't sound like this funding wart, but it really comes down to funding. And the more funding that we have for our roads and bridges, the more that we can do. But I guess if it relates to your problem in Marlboro, go on our New Hampshire Department of Transportation website, find my email in there under Chris Clement, and send me an email with the exact road that you lived on, and I'll take a look at it. It may actually be in the 10-year plan. I don't have the 10-year plan completely to memory, but it may be in there, and I promise I will follow up with you in terms of when we're going to get to that that issue on your road.
When we talk about funding, you mentioned federal funding earlier, Commissioner Clement. Does New Hampshire lose any federal funding for not having a seatbelt law, a mandatory seatbelt law?
We have. There was about $2 million we lost because we didn't have a seatbelt law.
What about the no helmet, motorcycle helmet law? Does that play into federal funding?
I don't know about that. I don't know if we lose any funding or not. That's a great question.
Our phone number again is 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. It's your chance to talk roads, bridges, rail, buses, transportation infrastructure with New Hampshire's new transportation commissioner, Christopher Clement. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. I want to ask you about buses, Commissioner Clement, and some in the legislature say, you know, forget about rail. Let's invest in our bus system. I'm wondering if there's any new bus routes coming online, though. We get a lot of complaints from folks that they can get anywhere north-south, but they can't get east-west.
Right. No, that's a great question. That's a really great question. We're actually working on a program now that we're calling East-West Bus. You probably will see something in June or July in terms of that service starting up.
Wow.
That service is
so that's new.
Yes, it is. It's going to start in the Seacoast. It's going to start in the Portsmouth area, and it's going to have a stop in Epping and maybe Exeter, going to Manchester Airport, and then do a loop around multiple times per day. And if that's successful, as a new starts, if you will, we'll expand that program even further.
Wow. So you can actually take a bus to the Manchester airport soon, because that's been
right.
a huge complaint that we get every single time we
that's
talk
right.
about
that's
transportation.
That's right. We started looking at that in 08 when I was the deputy commissioner at the time, and we're just got to a point now where we think that going through the RFP process, having a provider that's going to do that, looking at the types of equipment that we need to do that. But yes, I think that in June or July, that service will be starting up.
And I've also heard that there may be a bus provided between Durham and Concord, given that some students at UNH Durham will be taking classes at the new UNH Law, which is in Concord. Are you working with them at all on that, or is that pretty much a private or a service of just those two institutions?
I believe it's just a service with UNH.
All right. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We got a lot of comments, Commissioner Clement, from people on our Public Insight Network about transportation. Here's one that relates to buses that we just talked about. Sean Donovan of Lebanon writes, to make up for the state's fiscal responsibility for mobility, municipalities, institutions, private companies are contributing hundreds of thousands of dollars just in the Upper Valley. City of Lebanon, Town of Hanover, DHMC, and Dartmouth College contribute over $1 million to ensure transit service to employees and citizens. The municipal portion of that contribution falls upon the property tax. This is an untenable situation. And he goes on, I can't read the whole thing, but he says it's time for the state of New Hampshire to step up and resolve the lack of responsible funding for transit systems. What do you think about that? Is there a state role in municipal or regional transit systems, or should it be up to the people who live in that area?
Well, I think it's both. I think that I think the state should certainly play a part of that. You know, what percentage the state should pay versus municipality, that's always a question. Again, it comes down to that funding issue. But yeah, I think that if you have a program that's going well and we have some, you know, program with Concord Coach that comes down from the Dartmouth area into New York, that's a very successful program. And if those programs are building, that we should continue to invest. We've done the same thing with Boston Express. Program started up. It's the Boston Express is the most successful New Starts program in the country. And if as those programs come online and they are being successful, we need to invest more in them.
So the state interest is if we get more people off the roads in general, then the roads last longer. Because you could say, hey, you know, Upper Valley, good for you, doing great. But why should the state invest in that?
Well, I think that's absolutely, and thank you for bringing that. We want to have people in buses. We want to have people off the road. We'd like to, if passenger rail was there, not to clog the highways for safety and mobility for sure.
All right.
It all comes down to dollars and cents.
We will talk more after a short break and take more of your calls, so stay on the line, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
I'm Randy Benthien of Benthien Associates. Frankly, one of the reasons that we have done this for 23 years and know we're going to continue supporting NHPR is that so many of the people that make decisions in our business and nonprofit clients also listen to New Hampshire Public Radio.
For information about becoming an NHPR underwriter, visit the business support page at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Core Gastroenterology. Offering comprehensive care in the evaluation and treatment of gastrointestinal disorders, corephysicians.org, the art of wellness. And from the Lexus hybrids now with five models, including the CT with a combined EPA rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. More at Lexus.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, two longtime political opposition researchers talk about their new book, We're With Nobody. Email us your questions about opposition research to exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, a discussion with the new head of New Hampshire's Department of Transportation. Join us with your questions and comments. What do you think the department should put on the top of its priority list? What should be near the bottom or can wait? Do you agree with Commissioner Clement that better roads and bridges and rail and buses mean more prosperity? And if so, where does the money come from to build that infrastructure? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, keep them short, The Exchange at NHPR.org is the address. Here's another question from our Public Insight Network commissioner. Someone from PIN, as we call it, says, aging drivers. He says he's glad this issue is finally on the state's radar and what the state plans to do.
In terms of aging drivers, I think that really comes back around to mobility, comes back around to transit.
And New Hampshire's an aging state. So.
I.e. bus, right? We're all getting older for sure, and making sure that these transit programs are expanding. In our 10-year plan, we approved $530,000. We call it 5309 funds, which help in that area. We certainly could do more. And I think you're right that as time goes on, we're seeing the demand for those needs grow higher and higher. I think that also when you look at rail, that's absolutely a benefit for rail. If we did, you know, have this expanded rail program, and if it did was able to pay for itself, certainly more people would use those services.
If, that's the big if.
Right.
If it were able to pay for itself, which most rail systems don't, correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Although pay for itself in the classic sense of dollar for dollar, you were arguing before the break that these public transit systems do provide other non-financial benefits like keeping the roads better.
Free from congestion because you have people on buses, then they're not in their cars going on the road, you know, helping with the environmental aspect of keeping from the congestion aspect of it. Absolutely, yes.
All right, let's take another call. This is Ben in Sunapee. Hi, Ben. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I relocated to Sunapee from, I lived in Portsmouth for 15 years, and my concern is about the Memorial Bridge. Who actually is paying for the repair of that Memorial Bridge? And how long is that expected to take? I can't imagine that it's helping Portsmouth or Kittery businesses very much.
And Ben, thanks for calling. And boy, we always get lots of calls on Memorial Bridge. This is Route 1 on the seacoast connecting Portsmouth and Kittery. Thanks, Ben, for the call.
That's right. Good morning, Ben. Thank you. Yes, I think that the Memorial Bridge is the most talked about bridge in the entire state.
Why is that?
I don't know. And I live there. I live on the seacoast, and I'm downtown Portsmouth all the time. But it is the most emotional bridge for some reason in the state. It's a very good question. But as it relates to the Memorial Bridge, Ben, who's paying for it was your first question. It's a split between the state of Maine and the state of New Hampshire. It's an $81.4 million project, to be exact. Also, the state of New Hampshire and Maine received what they call the Federal Tiger Grant. It's a competitive grant. We received a $20 million Tiger Grant. Former Commissioner Campbell was very instrumental in getting that Tiger Grant for the state. And so we're splitting the cost 50-50, if you will. There is the city of Portsmouth is also paying a small amount, I shouldn't say small amounts, several hundred thousand dollars. It's about $600,000 of match money for their side. It's called the Scott Avenue Bridge that connects to the Memorial Bridge. So the city of Portsmouth is also involved. That project, we're going to be opening it July 3rd of 2013.
Oh, so a little more time to wait then.
The contract was for 565 days. The governor and council approved it on December 15th, and the clock started working then. So, the contractor, if they do not finish after 565 days, they have a penalty of $25,000 per day. So it's in their best interest to get it done. You know, just a little bit more regarding the bridge. We're hoping to get the center span floated out on a barge the first week of February. I think the date is February 5th. The same way it came in approximately 90 years ago, it's going to float out the same way on a big barge. It's going to go down to Boston and then be used for scrap. So,
all right. Well, Ben, thanks for that call. And let's take another one. This is Bill in Dover. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange with Commissioner Clement.
Good morning, Laura. Very, very good show. Very timely, too. I had a question for the commissioner. In terms of, this is in connection with the money thing again, as far as the budget is concerned for the State Department's transportation budget, where does the money come from? I realize that a significant part of it comes from the gas tax, the state's portion of the gas tax on a gallon of gasoline. But is there money from the general fund that's appropriated through the legislature to supplement and to add to the amount that is in the budget?
Bill, it's a great question. Thank you.
It really is a great question. Bill, where the money comes from, what we have in the state of New Hampshire is called the Highway Fund. And the Highway Fund is made up of of gas tax money, or called road toll money, which is about $124 million a year. And we also get registrations from that as well. That's almost the same. It's about $120 million a year. Then we have the state police fines go into that fund as well. That's about $13 million. And we have some other appropriations. So basically, and then the turnpike system that we have in DOT is what we call an enterprise fund. It's part of, it's under the umbrella of DOT, but it's a standalone entity in terms of its financial standing. And the our turnpike system brings in about $117 million a year, and that stays with the turnpike from capital investment and all that.
Turnpikes, again, are toll roads.
Turnpikes, right? Are toll roads, so that's separate. But as your question as it relates to the highway fund, the New Hampshire Department of Transportation really feeds off that highway fund, as does the Department of Safety, which is our state troopers, and so on and so forth. But no general funds, or very little general funds, I should say, maybe a few, you know, $50,000 or $60,000 from the general fund comes to DOT, and that's only for our transit bureau, if you will. But most, if 99.9% of our funding either comes from the highway fund or the turnpike part of it that's funded by itself.
Here's one more question on the gas tax. This is from Deborah in Grantham. She says, I wonder if the commissioner has any data about how much gasoline is purchased by non-resident motorists. Seems to me that if the gas tax was increased, our state would get some free financial assistance from tourists and motorists passing through. And knowing the degree to which non-residents would be contributing to our funding, it might make the tax more palatable to New Hampshire residents. Boy, anybody who's gone down I-93 on a Friday night, you see lots of Massachusetts plates coming up. What about that idea that Deborah raises?
We have a lot of great questions today from the audience. We don't have the data on that. If we could capture the data, that would be great. So the short answer is no, we don't have that. But you're right, it's an equitable tax. It's paid, you know, everyone's paying it. So if out-of-staters are coming in and buying gas at our New Hampshire stations, then we're harvesting that revenue from outside. If you look at Hampton, the Hampton toll booth, when we put open road tolling in Hampton, 70% of the people coming through that those tolls are out-of-staters.
So if the gas tax were raised here in New Hampshire, you could make the argument that people in Massachusetts or Connecticut would fill up at home and they wouldn't bother filling up here because it'd be you wouldn't have that price differential.
Not necessarily. And that's a big misconception. I think that if you look at New England, New Hampshire has the lowest gas tax in New England. Maine is at 34 cents per gallon. We're at 18 cents per gallon. You're right. It hasn't gone up since 1991. Just because we have a gas tax. So let's say our gas tax did go up 5 cents. It doesn't mean that you're going to pay 5 cents the following day per gallon at the pump. It may not go up at all. It actually could even go down based on competition between the gas stations and states. So it's not one for one, and that's a big misconception out there. If our gas tax was raised, your gas tax may not go up at all.
Let's take another call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Join us with your questions about New Hampshire's transportation system. We're talking with the new Department of Transportation Commissioner, Christopher Clement. And let's see, Commissioner Clement, let's go to Chuck in Enfield. Chuck's on the air. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm commenting or questioning concerning the commissioner's influence with the legislature. I was intrigued that he commented that we are losing money because we don't have a seatbelt law. And I know the legislature is considering passing a law increasing the speed limit to 70 miles an hour. And part of the argument is, well, everybody's going 70 anyway. I'd be willing to bet that most of the people going 70 are also wearing seatbelts. So the same argument could be made, and we would get that federal money.
Thanks for the call, Chuck. I had forgotten about that proposal to raise the speed limit, so thank you.
Right. So let me make sure I have the question right. You know, what is my influence or the department's influence with the legislature as it relates to the seatbelt law? Was that the question? Or?
Well, I think he was saying that because we don't have a seatbelt law, we lose $2 million. That's what you said earlier.
Correct.
I think he's wondering, are you going to push them on that and say, hey, folks, if we had a seatbelt law, we might get that $2 million. But I'm interested also in your thoughts on this proposal in the legislature to increase the speed limit to 70.
Right. So the first question is we... As far back as I could find, we have always, as these seatbelt law questions have come up, we as a department have always testified in terms of wanting to have the seatbelt law, because certainly for the funding, but also from a safety aspect of it. You know, we have approximately 124 deaths per year in the state, and we're trying to bring those numbers down to zero. I think there's a push nationwide towards zero deaths. In New Hampshire last year, we had under 100 deaths on the on the roads. Because of education, people wearing seatbelts, regardless of whether we have a law or not, people are just becoming more safe through education and wanting to be safe. Go ahead.
The speed limit. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, as it relates to the speed limit, that's a bill that has a lot of discussion, a lot of consternation that's going on back and forth. We do not support raising the speed limit. We, again, from a safety perspective, we would rather that the speed limit stay the way it is. Of course, we as a department would like everyone to wear seat belts to bring that towards zero deaths goal to fruition. But that discussion and that battle's been around for many decades, and I don't know if it's going to get solved anytime soon.
Well, Chuck, I appreciate the point. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, Chuck, I didn't have an exact answer for you, but it's an honest one.
Let's take a couple emails here that have just come in. Here's one from Camille, who says, are there any plans to improve infrastructure for bicycle commuting, bike lanes, wider shoulders, et cetera?
I think that any time we as a department are out working anywhere in the state and we're improving an asset, i.e. a road or a bridge, we're absolutely looking at that. Case in point with Memorial Bridge, the new Memorial Bridge will have a 5-foot bike lane and a 6-foot pedestrian lane. The former Memorial Bridge didn't have that. There was lots of discussion as it relates to bike ped. That's one area that I'm really surprised in how there's such strong advocates for the bike ped programs statewide. I think that from an investment point of view, we're hearing from the bike ped folks that we're not doing enough. We're listening, but again, it comes down to a dollars and cents issue. But to be clear, as we are going forward and we are putting in new facilities and as we are upgrading existing facilities, we're absolutely looking at bike ped and how those can be incorporated into the program.
Let's take one more call. This is Bruce in Lancaster. Go ahead, Bruce. You're on the exchange with Commissioner Clement. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Good morning, Laura. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Sir, I've been an advocate for aviation in the state for the past 10 or 12 years, and I'll be very quickly here. There's been several programs things in the budget, the state budget, to support some of the smaller airports in our state. There are 24 airports here in New Hampshire, and there have been several line items within the Department of Transportation's budget to support some of the smaller airports. In 2008, they were zeroed out because of budget constraints, and again in 2010, they were zeroed out. And I'm wondering whether you're going to support trying to fund these line items once again and bring some of the support back to our smaller airports.
Bruce, thanks a lot for the call. And, you know, we haven't talked about that yet. Aviation is an important part of the transportation infrastructure here.
That's another great question. We actually have 117 registered airports in the
really?
State.
Really? That many?
117. Some of those airports are just in people's backyards. But as it relates to funding, you're right. Back in the last biennium, I think there was $250,000 each year, and that funding was cut. Those are general funds, and the reason why those funds were cut is because the general fund was in really financial turmoil, and I think the general fund today is in financial turmoil. So as our policymakers started to look at what was really mission critical to the state, what were the must-haves that we had to have, I think funding it to airports didn't make the cut. I think that there's certainly Representative Nevins, who's very vocal and regarding airports and having more money for airports. He's always on the scene as it relates to airports, talking about the need for investment. But I think that once the financial times get better, once the economy turns around and there's, you know, money in the general fund, perhaps those programs come back. You know, as a point, we take in about $1 million per year in aircraft registration revenue, and approximately 75% of that, so $750,000 of that revenue, goes into the general fund, and that remaining $250,000 goes out to those 24 airports that you were talking about.
So the airports are subsidizing the general fund?
That's right, and that's been around for a very long time. So,
is that a situation that you think is unfair, should be reversed, or?
Well, it's not up to me to decide whether it's fair or not. And that's what Representative Nevins has been working on, that, you know, there's $1 million going into the general fund, 75% of it's going to the general fund from the aircraft registrations, and he would like to get a higher percentage of that, more than 25%, to go towards airports. And that's another one of the many discussion topics as it relates to this session at the legislature.
The American Society of Civil Engineers, as you know, ranks the infrastructure of all 50 states every 2 years. And the most recent ranking, Commissioner Clement, came out in mid-2011. It gave New Hampshire roads and bridges a C- and a C, respectively. So C- for roads, C for bridges. Do you agree with those grades?
Well, I think overall that I guess my message or my answer is there, and it's not going to be a direct one. I think that we can certainly do better. Right at the very beginning of the program, I said we're putting between $30 and $35 million per year towards bridges. We should be doing, more, almost $50 million or $55 million. So
to wipe that red listed bridges,
to wipe the
down.
red list bridge out completely off, we could certainly do more. Whether it's a C minus or a C or a B, that's for debate. I'd have to look at the data and look at how they came up with the calculation. But I guess my message is there. We could absolutely do better. We need to do better because it's the factor of 10. If we don't maintain the bridges in our infrastructure today, it's going to cost us 10 times more in the future to do that. And if we don't have the money today, we're probably not going to have the money to pay 10 times more in the future. So preservation and maintenance is everything when you're talking about roads and bridges.
Commissioner Clement, it's been nice to meet you, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Christopher Clement. Again, he's the New Hampshire Department of Transportation's new commissioner. He previously served as the director of the Governor's Office of Economic Stimulus and also as the Transportation Department's deputy commissioner and chief operating officer. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Join our page to continue the conversation. Learn more about what we're doing every day on The Exchange. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.